Started.
Okay, good morning and welcome on this day of October 16th, 2016 for our community worship and study. Today is actually the day of Oseifa, so it's good. And if you have your Oseifa, hope you made your prayers. I did. Some people were in the vicinity when the prayers were being given and recited, but we'll talk about that. So it's good. I'm looking forward to sharing this final teaching on the Holy Odu Ogbe Obara, which has given us a lot of very great insights and experiences. So let's make it official. Eriwoya Ayagbo Ayato. Eriwoya Ayagbo Ayato Ayaje. Omeriwoya Ayagbo Ayato Ayaje Ayamu. Omeriwosinpe. Loni asimi o eniyan to pe eriwo ya loni asimi o orun mi la o eniyan to pe eriwo ya loni asimi eniyan to pe eriwo ya loni asimi lo ni asimi o eni an to pe eriwo ya lo ni asimi o orun mi la o eni an to pe eriwo ya lo ni asimi eni an to pe eriwo ya lo ni asimi. You know, that portion of the invocation tells us today belongs to Asimi. Asimi is the day of rest. But in the theological significance of it is that Asimi is Eshu's mother. And all of the Iromale were having a big festival, and they were going to the mythological market. And it was a big annual festival. Everyone was going. Oromila was on his way, but it was like today. It was the day of worship. And so Oromila said, I'm going. You guys go without me. I'll be there. But first I need to tend to Ifa. He was tending to Ifa. He was doing everything. And it delayed him. All the offerings and things, it delayed him. So finally, when he was on his way to the market, he met this woman who was very old, and she was, you know, he could see that she was very weak, and so he stopped, and he was then tending to her, and she ended up dying, and so Oromila stopped, and he conducted all the burial rites, which takes 9 days. So Romulus stayed there and did all of the different rituals and then buried this woman who he didn't know. Then as he was on his way to the market, all the Iromale were coming back. And they said, oh, Romulus, we missed you. What happened? And I was on my way, but I met this woman and I couldn't, you know, she was very sick and she was on her way there, but she couldn't make it, and, you know, she died, so I stayed to bury her, and, you know, her name was Asimi. And just then, you know, Eshu just starts to bawl, crying. Asimi, did you say? Yes, Asimi. Oh, my God, that was my mother. So he was so sad, but then he was so happy because Oromila had done this deed. He said, Oromila, from now on, you know, everybody, I strike fear and terror into all of the Iromale. Nobody crosses me. Nobody. If I say jump, everybody jumps. If I say sit, everybody sits. Well, from this moment on, anything and everything that you need, I'm there. I will be your most loyal servant. Everything that you command, I'll make come to pass. And so that's how Eshu, you know, one of the reasons why Eshu and Orumila are inseparable friends. People wonder, how can Orumila, who is so composed and so gentle and so patient and so wise, how can he hang out with someone like Eshu, who is just so, you know, volatile and, you know, unpredictable, and, you know, how can those two go together? This is one of the reasons why. So Orumila accepted Eshu's allegiance and also said that, well, we're going to continue to honor your mother. Every time we come to your mother's name will be synonymous with rest. Your mother's name will be synonymous with, you know, sitting down and being reverent. And so that's why we say, Lo niya simio, today belongs to Simi, who is Eshu's mother. So we pay homage to Asimi, and we take our moment of rest to venerate the spirits and the forces of life. Ashel. Atoto, arere, atoto, arere, ifafe fohu, bogbo enyi adake o, atoto. Atoto, arere, ifafe fohu, bogbo enyi adake o. Atoto, arere, atoto, arere, ifafe fohu. Bogbo enyi adake o, atoto arere, atoto arere, ifafe fohu. Bogbo enyi adake o, atoto arere, atoto arere, ifafe fohu, bogbo enyi adake o, atoto arere, ekpa Orumila, atoto arere, ifafe fohu, bogbo enyi adake o, 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 ifafe fohu, bogbo enyi adake o. Ifagbe wa se ase ase iba toto toto to iba o iba o iba toto toto to iba o iba o iba toto toto to iba o onile awajuba o iba toto onile ya para kwetu awajuba o iba toto onile ya Eshu lalu awajuba o
We pay homage to Ile Ogerea Foko Yeri. We pay homage to the rising sun, the beginning of a new day, a new cycle, an opportunity to reinvent ourselves and re-envision our lives. We pay homage to the setting sun, the completion of a cycle, the manifestation of all of our dreams and our hard work. We pay homage to the divinities, those who sit to the right of Olodumare, as well as those who sit to the left of Olodumare, as well as those divinities who shuttle back and forth between the seen and unseen realm. We pay homage to the spirits of our ancestors, all of those who came before us, who toiled and sacrificed and lived and died on this earth so they become gatekeepers and watchers in heaven. We pay homage to you, and we give thanks for your struggle. We pay homage to the spirits of our mothers, the spirits of our fathers, our own internal spirit, as well as the spirit of our own destiny, the thing that we must manifest given our environment and the resources that we have before us. We pay homage to the spirit of the brand new baby being born right now, the one whose life is filled with promise and joy, and we invoke the spirit of that child that you would bring a meaningful contribution to our community, and do something that will be legendary, that we will all be able to be proud of. We pay homage to the eldest member of our society, the one who's lived the longest here in the city of Oakland, the eldest member who's seen the most days in this wonderful city, and we pray that your wisdom and your experience will trickle down and continue to empower us and guide us and show us the way to make a more meaningful contribution to the city of Oakland and in the whole Bay Area community and the world at large. We beg that all of these forces of life and creation will work together in our favor, that we might be able to absorb and integrate the wisdom of Ifa as it is shared through us in this moment. Ashe, ashe, ashe. So today, thank you for making your way through the rain and making time in your day to fellowship and share the wisdom of Ifa with us. We're going to continue with our exploration of the Holy Odu Ogbe Obara. This is our last round with Ogbe Obara. What were the other verses or stories that we shared from Ogbiobara.
Dumbade.
Dumbade. The multi-talented.
Bojuri.
Bojuri, the wicked king.
Onikewu and her three husbands.
Onikewu and her three husbands.
And now I have Ojao.
And last but not least, Ojao Boku and the curse of infertility. And the theme of this ifa, of this particular story, is that of spiritual inheritance and how, you know, we inherit. We have a spiritual inheritance. Something has been passed down to us. And like life itself, some of it is positive, some of it is negative. Some of it is sweet, some of it is spicy, you know. Some of it we want, some of it we don't. But it's all ours. It's all getting passed down. And so this particular verse highlights the ways in which we inherit a complete package by our lineage. And sometimes we want to, when we start the process of you know, discovering our ancestral promise, and we start having to name the names and start doing that research, and we start seeing who crops up. Sometimes we want to filter it out. We don't want to include everybody in the mix, and we don't have that luxury. We can't retroactively edit our lineage and just say like, well, you know, I'm here, but I'm not because of you. So we're gonna take your name out of the book. Now, we don't have to spend all of our time venerating that particular soul. We don't have to celebrate what if that individual was involved with something that was unsavory and really was damaging to the family, the lineage. We don't have to repeat that, but we cannot pretend that they don't exist any more than we can pretend we don't have, you know, a brother or a sister on the other side of town or whatever. You can't remove people from your family. It's just the way it is. And so this is a story that shows us, you know, how we inherit things and how we can make the most of it. And in a certain way, it it definitely shows us how the ancestral promise is greater than the generational curses. And from a certain perspective, we might even see how they go hand in hand. When we look at, you know, some of the things that, you know, the gift and the wound for us as individuals, they go together. And the thing that I'm most susceptible to coincides with my greatest gifts. You know, the reason why I have this vulnerability is because I have a gift that puts me into a certain area. Or the reason why I have or vice versa. A certain thing where I become super vulnerable produces a certain kind of a gift. Almost like when someone will tell you, there was the boy. He was somewhere in California, I want to say. But the boy was blind. But because his eyes were, you know, totally blind, he had developed a super, not only acute hearing, but he created his own sonar where he could make sounds, and based on the sounds and the way they would reverberate back to him, he could tell you, that's a chair, that's a trash can, that's a pillow. You know, so this ability produced a gift. They go together. I'm sure that if he could see, he wouldn't be doing sonar. There just wouldn't be a need for it. So many times the thing that we want to remove our weakness, actually we're cutting off our gateway to our greatest strength. You know, and so ancestrally, this story brings that kind of a lesson into focus. because in this instance, there was a woman, and her name was Oja Ogboku. Oja Ogboku was a great lady. She was responsible in every way. And she lived her life in such a way that she had many suitors. And she was, you know, at the marrying age, she found a loving husband, and she moved into this family, and it was a great family. They loved her. They loved her. They loved her. So much so that it wasn't even like she was a wife, like she was a sister. You know, she was a daughter. She just was fully integrated into this family. And she loved them as well. You know, she was very appreciative of the relationship that they had and the relationship between she and her husband. But still in her heart, though, she was unfulfilled. She was unsatisfied. And after a few years, that sense of unfulfillment and dissatisfaction actually started to turn to sadness. She was, you know, it was like the happier she was with the family, the sadder she became. You know, the more, you know what I mean, the goodness that they shared with one another made her feel a sense of remorse because she couldn't have children, or she had not had children. So, you know, it had been years, and she was like, wow, this is terrible. You know, I know this would be the thing that would really be such a beautiful thing for our family. So it started to become a real burden in her mind, in her heart. And so when she couldn't take it anymore, she finally decided to go consult Ifa. So she consulted Ifa, and it was Ogbe Obada that came for her. Ifa told her to make a sacrifice. And in this sacrifice, she was going to go to the great mother, Ile. Ile is one of the supreme deities. And things that we do with Ile are binding. Like one of the greatest blessings, the greatest oaths, the strongest curses involve the earth. You know, and so she went there and she made her sacrifice and she prayed to Ile, please bless me that I be able to, you know, produce a child and continue our lineage. And she made the sacrifice, and sure enough, within a couple of months, Ogboku was pregnant, and then she gave birth to a baby. And then, you know, that just like kind of opened up the floodgates. She had many children, and they, you know, had a very big, expansive family, and it was, you know, kind of they lived happily ever after. So Ifa says that there's a need to continue to sacrifice for the things that, you know, that once we've tried to solve a problem and we've reached and we've tried and we've done and we've been patient and things haven't panned out, there's a need for us to sacrifice, to consult the divine, to do the things that, you know, appease the deities or the entities that will help us to resolve our problem. But we got to keep enough hope to take that step. Because, as it were, she was going to call that child Eyinle, the egg laid by Ile, Eyinle. And so she, you know, that would be her reminder that, like, this was a fertility that was given by the earth, you know. And that was her first child, right? But as it were, Eyinle went on and, you know, became an adult, and she married, and like her mother, you know, she came into a beautiful family, and she was well received and well taken care of, and you know, everything was great. But after time, a year, 2 years, 3 years, she found that she wasn't becoming pregnant. So the cycle repeated. And so she started to, you know, become worried, and then worry became, you know, sorrow, and then sorrow started to, you know, deep into remorse. She's like, man, I don't know what to do. She went back. She consulted Ifa. It was the Ifa that was revealed for her. He said, you are going to have to make a sacrifice. And your sacrifice is going to be, is going to include dog. Dog. And the way that you prepare this, there's different ways that they give dog. Now, dog is usually synonymous with Ogun. Oh, it's definitely Ogun's favorite. But other deities also take dog. This particular way that they do it, they're going to cut the dog meat in strips, kind of like jerky. And then they call it Ijanja. And so she, you know, made the sacrifice. And a couple months later, she became pregnant. Boom. She gave birth to a baby. She called the baby Ijanja as a reminder, you know, to remember. And then just like her mother, that opened the floodgates. She gave birth to lots of children. They lived happily ever after in a way. Okay. Time goes on. Ijanja, who's a girl? She becomes marrying age. She gets married. She finds herself a great family. Everything is fantastic. It's good. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. She doesn't get pregnant. So the same process repeats. You know, her worry starts turning into sadness. Her sadness starts, you know, bleeding into remorse. She's really like, you know, just sad because this is not what she wants. So she goes and she consults Ifa. Ogbe Obara is the Odu that also came for her. Bless you. And they told her that she's going to have to go and make a sacrifice. But she's going to have to make her sacrifice at the river. And so she does. And she got all the sacrificial materials. She included the best bata drummers, singers, dancers. And they went and they sang and they had a procession. When she made her sacrifice, they led a whole procession. And they sang and they danced and they, you know, she was telling the river, I'm coming, Erile. Erile was the river she was giving it to. And this is near Oshogbo. Erile is a river. Erinodo is a little river near Oshogbo. They're going and they're, you know, singing and dancing and saying, Erile, I'm coming. You know, even if you don't take my ram, Erile, give me a baby to carry. Even if you don't take my goat, Erile, give me a baby to carry it. Even if you don't accept this, Erile, please. Whatever happens when we do this, I'm begging you, Erile, give me a baby to carry. As she's singing, the spirit of Erile rises up out of the river. And everybody's like, whoa, you know. Greeting the river, boom, 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 boom. And she just, you know, got down. And she, you know, opened her heart to Erinle and said, I'm begging you, you know, more than anything else, please accept my prayers today and let me have a baby to carry. So the river Erinle accepted her plea and promised her, you're going to have a baby. And as she was, you know, just celebrating and just in jubilation and being, you know, giving thanks for everything that Erinle started to tell her about her expectant child, she started to have menstruation. Because the thing about Ijanja is she had never menstruated in her entire life. So this is her first time. So as she's dancing, she started to have menstruation. And she's just amazed and just overjoyed because she knows this means that, you know, my fertility is activating. And sure enough, a couple months later, she gives birth. And she, too, has a child. And with that, the third round, they broke the curse. They broke the cycle, right? Let me give you the whole verse before we go into the discussion. Ogbe Obara. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. I bought kola nuts, bitter kola, to come and meet my mother. That's not the full verse. One's business ought to be taken care of, and one's trade ought to be handled well. If one stays at the river to drain the water, water will splash onto one's face and splash into one's mouth and splash all over one's body. This was Ifa's message for Oja Oboku when lamenting her inability to beget her own child. She was advised to make sacrifice. She complied. After giving birth to the baby, she named the baby Eyinle. When Eyinle grew up, she too was lamenting her inability to have a baby. She was advised to offer sacrifice. She was asked to give a dog as the sacrificial material. She complied. After giving birth to the baby, she named the baby Ijanja. Ijanja grew up to adulthood. She never saw her menstruation once in her life. She was weeping in lamentation for her inability to have a child. She was advised to offer sacrifice. She was asked to go and meet her mother by the riverside. I have brought kola nuts to come and meet my mother. Erin Joguola, the elephant has honor as its inheritance, offspring of the elephant that marches majestically with honor. Ijanja, here I come, the daughter of Eyinle, who resides in the river. I have brought kola nuts to come to meet my mother. I have really come in search of my mother. Ijanja, I have brought kola nuts and bitter kola nuts. I have brought bitter kola, and I have also brought alligator pepper to come and meet my mother. I have come in search of my mother. Eyinle, please come quickly and take all the ritual materials from your daughter. Erin Joguola, offspring of the elephant that marches majestically with honor. Ijanja, here I come, daughter of Eyinle who resides in the river. I have also brought black-eyed peas to come and meet my mother. Erin Ola, Erin Joguola, Omo Erin Tifola, Ijanja, here I come. That's the offspring of the elephant who marches majestically with honor. Daughter of Eyinle, who resides in the river, I have also brought a matured ram to come and meet my mother. I have come in search of my mother. Eyinle, please come quickly and accept all ritual materials from your daughter. Erin Joguola, child of the elephant that marches majestically with honor. Ijanja, here I come, the daughter of Eyinle, who resides in the river. Before long, not too far off, join us in the midst of abundant children. Several children is what Ifa guarantees. Ifa says that we will be blessed with children. Ifa says even a barren woman who has never seen her menstruation will come and give birth to children through Ogbe Obara. So this is consistent with Ogbe Obara's theme as a miracle worker. You know, this is the thing where people think, oh, this is not nothing. This is impossible. Ogbe Barada. Ogbe is the one that makes wonders. And so here we have the wonder of childbirth for not just one, not one person, right? Then the next generation, the cycle repeats. And then a third generation, the cycle repeats another time. And so you have, you know, the evidence that the level of patience and focus and tenacity and hope that we have to have, we have to pass it down. We have to give it to the next generation. No, this is something you need to believe in. This is something that's going to solve your problem. And it's got to be passed down in such a way, in such a living way, that they will also pass it down. You know? And so when we think about I like this story because it goes in three generations. Family wealth is gained and lost in three generations as a rule. As a rule, it's you know, so there's in different cultures they've got different sayings. In English, they'll say shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. So it means that like a guy goes from you know having no you know he's basically a laborer. You go from being a laborer to a gentleman back to a laborer in three generations. In Spanish, they say. El abuelo arriero, el abuelo arriero, el hijo something, y el nieto mendigo. What is the word they use? Anyway, they say el abuelo arriero. The grandfather was like a herdsman. He was like a hustler. He was a guy in the ranch. He was a, you know, arriero is synonymous with somebody who works hard. The son, caballero, el hijo caballero, the son was a gentleman. And the son and the grandson, a beggar. Right? The grandfather was a hustler. He made his son a gentleman. But then his grandson became a beggar. You know, so that's the rule. In China, they say rice paddy to rice paddy in three generations, you know, because what happens? When we get a blessing, we get lazy. When we get a blessing, we indulge. When we get a blessing, we start to, like just forget what it took to actually achieve. And so the blessing or the beauty of this story is that Ojaoboku was the grandmother. And from one angle of the story, well, this is a curse that you know, she can't reproduce. But then on the other end of the equation, she didn't stop there. That's not where she let her story end. She didn't allow that condition to dictate to her, oh, well, this is what it is. Guess I'll just accept that and stop. No, she went and she consulted Ifa. Ifa told her what to do. She did it. And when she did, it opened up all the possibilities. But the curse fell onto her firstborn. Her firstborn was a daughter. Her daughter repeated that same cycle, and then she passed it on to her daughter. And then finally, they ended the problem. You know, but instead of it becoming a curse that defined that family lineage, it was the promise that defined them because they overcame it. And they were all synonymous with abundance. They were all synonymous with multitudes of children and the family growth and expansion. So What we can learn from that, Ifa, is that when we want to look at our devotion, when we want to consider the reason why we return back to the ancestral promise, it's so that we can, you know, at least three generations. This is something that I'm planting for three generations down the line. I'm really calculating and going so, I don't want to just say going so hard on it, but I'm being so devout about this because I want it to be a living experience. I want it to be something that will be a value, a true value, and it will carry over and over and over. My mother used to say to me, you know, I always say this is the one thing that you didn't have right. But she would always say, son, there's one place I can't go with you. And that's into your future. You know, And she would be telling me that when she'd be giving me a lesson about, hey, you better get this right, because I'm not going to always be here. And so if you don't get this lesson, then I'm not going to be there, you know. When she'd be giving me that, when she'd be telling me, like, I don't know what's going to happen next. You are going to be the one that's going to have to manage whatever it is. I'm not going to be there. This is going to be for you to figure out, you know. But the value carries on. You know, and she's looking and saying, I'm giving you this with the intent that you will be looking down the line. I'm giving you this so that you can start planning and putting it in a place and using it in such a way that you will intend to pass this on. So responsible. And that's our duty as devotees. That's our duty. Everything that we do becomes part of our, it's all kind of inheritance. But certainly those of us who have said, man, my spiritual health is important, then that becomes a vital thing that we say, man, if I don't pass on anything else, I'm going to make sure that the spiritual inheritance is understood and internalized and valued for what it is. Because this is what truly defines who we are. This is what truly, these are the only things that make us different from other people. It's your family lineage. That's the only thing that really separates you from me. That's what gives you your unique position. Your family lineage is the one thing that gives you your unique position. Your family lineage is the one thing that gives you your unique position. It gives you insight into something that I don't know. I can't know. Because it's been passed down in a quiet, subtle way. That they gave it to you before you even were aware of what you were seeing. They taught it to you. You were tasting it. You were eating it before you even realized, like, yeah, I know what that tastes like. Because my mom cooked with that. But my dad always put this, like this, like this, and like that. I don't know any other way to do it. This is, you know, just natural and normal. So they pass it on in such a way that we don't even know, Shegun, how to calculate it. Or how to measure when it came through. That's the greatest blessing, you know. That's the greatest blessing, and that's what the ancestral promise is all about. But going back to the idea that the ancestral promise is just the lovely part, or is just the pleasant idea, or the thing that makes me feel good and comfortable, it's not. It's going to be associated with something that is a bit of a challenge, even something that reaches to the point of where people might say it's a curse, you know. Embrace it, like Ojao Boku did. She faced it. It took her into the depths of her discomfort and her sorrow, but then she didn't become totally isolated and defined by that. She then went through that to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And she gave to the earth. And then when it fell to her daughter carried it as long as she could on her own, and then she also made her sacrifice. And then it was, you know, passed on to her daughter, and then she also made her sacrifice. And so we have the ability. We just need the vision and the intention to make sure that what we do today will become the spiritual inheritance of our grandchildren, of our grandchildren's generation. What I'm doing today is going to be shining, you know. And, you know, it's interesting that just recently for myself, and then I want to open up for a conversation, I've gotten a profound appreciation for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I was not in the nation. I no one in my family was in the nation. I didn't know anybody as a child growing up in the nation. Zero. nation, you know. But as I start coming into different levels of black consciousness and nationalism, you know, I start to realize, oh, some of the stuff that I consider like, you know, just black conscious, that's from the nation. That was Elijah Muhammad who, like, wrote that down. Even, like, here we keep going back to being here in Defermory Park, the Black Panther Party, the 10-point plan of the Black Panther Party, what we want, you know they got that from the nation. The Black Panther Party, go read what we want and go read what the Muslims believe. What the Black Panther Party, what we want and what the Muslims believe, and you're going to see the nation. And then you go read the Orisha Lifestyle Agreements, the 16 Orisha Lifestyle Agreements. And you're going to see the 16 Orisha Lifestyle Agreement and what the, you know, what we want from the Black Panthers and what the Muslims believe. I had no idea. I had no idea. What the Muslims believe was the last thing I read. You know, but I did read what the Black Panthers want when I was going through and confirmed with people and said, hey, what are Orisha Lifestyle Agreements? What are the things that we need to do that we all agree upon, that will bind us? If you live in Texas or you live in Louisiana or you live in California, you live in Chicago, what are the things that we all agree upon? If you Vodun, Candomblé, Lukumi, whatever, what's going to cut if you're African-American? If you're African-American. I don't care if you were initiated in Trinidad or if your godmother is Puerto Rican. I don't care. If you're African-American, your spiritual inheritance is focused on us. And if the Lukumi thing works for you, you get miracles with that, bust it. If you Haitian Vodun, it's your thing and it makes it work, put it to work. That's not my concern. But our spiritual inheritance as Africans in the United States has to be a certain thing. So the 16 agreements are intended to do that, to say that we have a different agenda. Our agenda is not in Nigeria. We practice the Nigerian, I practice the Nigerian way. But my agenda is not Nigeria. I respect Nigeria as what it is, as the source, as the root, as, you know, the defining parameters of my practice. But my practice is not, my agenda is not in Nigeria. My agenda is not in Cuba. My agenda is not in Puerto Rico. It can't be, because I live here. I live here. So that's part of the spiritual inheritance. You know, that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, well, has to be, is part of my spiritual inheritance, even though I was never in the nation. So I want for part of the spiritual inheritance to be that Orisha Lifestyle will be a part of all. So I hope and pray that in two generations there will be young black people who will inherit Orisha Lifestyle or the principles and the beliefs and the practices of Orisha Lifestyle, even if they've never seen a Babalawo. They don't know what a Babalawo is. I ain't never heard of that. But I know that this works, though. I know that this belief right here works for me. Having this ancestral thing in my house and doing this with my... When this happens and I go consult with my grandmother, that works. You don't have to know that that came out of XYZ. You just have to know that it is a good part of your spiritual inheritance, that it helps you define your reality in a way that's good for you. And you don't have to accept what the mainstream tells you who you are and why you exist and what you can do and what you can't do. And those are things that we don't have to accept. We don't have to buy into all of their definitions of what life is and what life can be. We have another definition, and that comes from our spiritual inheritance. Once we take control over defining our spirit, that's greater than defining our intellectual, you know, our education. that's greater than if we were in the military. It's greater than if we were in the so-and-so gang. It's greater than, because this is our true identity. Our spiritual identity is our true identity. Everything else is an add-on. It's an enhancement, you know. So taking responsibility for our spiritual inheritance, passing it on in a way that we really wanted to continue to manifest in three generations is, to me, the great blessing of this particular Odu of Ogbe Obada, this particular verse, I'm sorry, of Ogbe Obada. And in Oja Ogboku, I see a lot of wisdom, and a great example of how to envision and plan and carry out a spiritual practice in a way that it will show itself in the value of itself in the third generation. Because that's the true test. If it can make it three generations, then you've broken that cycle. But you got to aim for at least three generations. You know?
That's the thing about when you're thinking about decolonizing
spiritually. Yeah, uh-huh. Yes. Decolonizing ourselves spiritually. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. We'll know that we've decolonized ourselves effectively when in three generations, even the people who are Christians are culturally and ancestrally rooted. Even the people who are Muslims are culturally and ancestrally rooted. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. So with that, I want to let me see if we can open it up here. We're at 1 hour right now. When you can take into consideration what this
message is and how it impacts you, and this is open also to our folks on the phone. What do you see here? What does this resonate with you, and what questions might you have? In the true sense of what the Ifa is, this would pertain to birth. Yeah. Now, I mean, real time.
Could you repeat the question?
Then it's going to be talking about that. That would only pertain to somebody if they were doing it. But as a teaching tool that we're using it for right now, then we can take liberties to say that, no, we're not just talking about giving physical birth, but we are talking about like the idea of our ancestral promise, our ideas, our plans, our, you know, our investment in future generations. Like, for example, the only reason I started to do public Orisha things a long time ago, but I started to do it because I didn't want my children to feel weird. I didn't want them to feel weird. So I started going to their school. That's how it all started. My oldest son was in kindergarten. I went to his school, and I started telling stories in kindergarten class. And the kindergarten teachers. It was a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
They just absorbed it, all of the children, all of them. And the I knew I had been successful when, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, a gentleman who's a dance teacher, he says, hey, I met one of your students. And I said, you met one of my students? Yeah, I went to so-and-so middle school, I was teaching dance. He was an Afro-Cuban dancer. I was teaching such and such. I was teaching dance at this school, and I told them we were going to dance for Ogun. And this little white boy raised his hand. I know Ogun. And he said, you know, I kind of ignored him at first. And he says, I know Ogun. And so he says, okay, so who is Ogun? He said, this little boy just started to tell me all this stuff about Ogun. And then he started to, like, do things. And he says, where did you learn that? Well, Baba Oba Femi was in my after-school program, such and such and such and such. He says, so whatever it is that y'all did, he got it. And that's when I said, good. That's the mission accomplished.
I don't.
Yes. Yes.
So you can only teach so much as possible. Right. So it's like what the other aspects of my life. We need our children to school by our beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
We need it all that. That's how we do this.
Yeah.
You think, you know, when you said that third generation, I always think about great family financially.
The Rothschild,
yeah,
the Carnegie.
Yeah, and just like everything they did was to overlap themselves with their children to be with the third and fourth and fifth. The Kennedy.
Yes.
The Bushes.
Yes.
Going forward will be the Obamas.
Yes.
You know, it's like everything. Making decisions as being mindful enough to be able to make those decisions. That will take your faith to the grave. Sometimes we have to go to heaven. I was thinking about my grandfather, who said that in financially, he has blessed four generations of children. One investment.
Mm.
One investment has blessed four generations.
Mm-hmm.
And, mean old man, not mean, but he was very focused, even as a young child. I just remember his name. You're not going to take it. And then I think of my mother, who it just seems like as a slave, it's ferocious about her. Make sure that it goes on her. And in a way before, she wasn't communicating. Aggressive from a woman who's not aggressive at all. From a very private woman, and one who's definitely meek, but she's aggressive now. The possibility of a difference. But I think we have lost a lot of change. My God,
that's the first step.
Yeah, because it's like, and because she has a grandmother, there's not much work that I need to do to check the price for you. In the conversation, now that she's a young adult, having those conversations about how to and that was like, they're like lectures. And I think for the first time in my life, I'm starting to think about them in our family. What's really good about what we do, or what we're born into. Versus some shit, this shit all here needs change. It can start. It can shift with the decision that you made when you get married. The curse of infertility. Very personal to me because at a very young age my body was so much. And I was also thinking of
it can be. It all depends on it depends on the why. My very first client was the father came for her. I think it was Obeirosu that came for her. I think it was Obeirosu. Pretty sure it was Obeirosu. She had been cursed. Her husband, family, were curanderos from Mexico. And they didn't want him to marry her. But he did, and they cursed her. And so this lady was like 23, 24, 25. So I haven't had menstruation in like 3-4 years. And we made the sacrifice, and it was like this, you know, the one who was, she was jubilating, celebrating, she had her menstruation. This lady called me on the phone. It was the weirdest thing. My first line. She called me on the phone.
I'm on my period.
She was, you know, like a proper Mexican lady, you know. I was like, good.
What do you say to that?
I gotta go now. We thank you. Goodbye.
That was
a cold one, but, you know, so it depends on the why. This one, you know, the mother had to do this part to set the stage, and, you know what I mean, and push it down. The other one, you know, there's something that happened, and then you got to do something to actually combat or undo what, you know, someone else has done or some offense. Maybe you offended some deity. You know, that would be a different thing. But, you know, either way, being able to address it and being able to address it with a purpose that extends beyond my own immediate needs. That's the, you know what I mean? Oh, wait a minute, I'm doing this for me, but I'm also doing it because I want something to carry on, something to survive me. And I think that's true of everything that we do, just as a community. Thinking about it, how's this going to care? How am I going to make sure that this carries on into not just the next generation, but for 3 generations, you know? Because you look at how many things. When I started to embrace the Orisha lifestyle, I was so frustrated. I lived in L.A. at the time because I couldn't find anything. And I remember after a couple of years, I'm like, I know I'm not the first person to stumble onto this. I know I am not the only person in the city of Los Angeles who was interested in my ancestry. How come I can't find? What happened to all the people who were around in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s? Where are they? You know, so that becomes the thing where it's like, no, we can't do it like, we can't keep doing it like that. Where every time somebody wants to get on, you just have to know that one guy who lives over there on Maple exists. You don't know him, you're out. And they get lost. But that's one generation, and then boom. How can it be that we come from the greatest organizers, the greatest community organizers perhaps that the world has ever known? We engineered the civil rights movement. How could it be that we are the inheritors of the civil rights movement and we can't organize ourselves out of the supermarket today? How is that possible?
I think the civil rights movement was desperation.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that they were willing to make certain sacrifices because of the desperation. We're not desperate. We are, you know, we've seen our brothers and stuff killed in the street and all this other stuff.
That's right.
And we feel really bad, but we're not. You see desperation when it's the woman's son or the woman's husband,
right,
or you or the man was shot in a car with you in front of you. You see that, and
right,
you feel that desperation.
Right.
But in our physical environment at work and when we come home, it's very comfortable.
Right. That's why they have the el abuelo arriero. The grandfather was a hustler.
Mm-hmm.
The son was a gentleman, and the grandson a beggar. We're the gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
We're the gentlemen. Our grandparents were the hustlers. They were desperate. They were mm-hmm. We gotta get it. And they were so organized. Like bees in a hive. Like they said, we created Uber. Y'all know we created Uber.
Gypsy cabs.
Oh, we created Uber. We ain't riding the BART. And we ain't riding AC Transit. From this day to this day, ain't nobody going to ride public transportation. But everybody's got what it is. No
and
cell phones.
The internet. That was before you doing massive labs on Instagram or Twitter or... This was
by
word of mouth. Can you imagine how long this
took? With more community. And I was talking about that with a new chef we got at work, and he was talking about how technology, he was saying how technology brings us close together. And I was saying things like using technology to actually spread us further apart than mm-hmm. though it's supposed to bring us together.
Right.
So he's like, yeah, well, that's true, because, you know, even when you go out to a restaurant, you know, everybody at the dinner table, it took your whole family, everybody. So, you know, even in that situation, you know, within a house, everybody's completely separate. You know, everybody being mm-hmm. over the corner mm-hmm. on their cell phone, not even feeling or even talking with each other, or even getting to know each other.
Right.
You know, I think then there's some people who actually know more about their family members through their Facebook posts.
Right.
And actually been talking to them.
Right.
You know, and being around them or socializing with them.
I don't care.
I think it's like that following them, because me and my wife I've been getting on her a lot about Facebook, and because she kind of arguing with family members, I'm like, you're 2,000 miles away. You know, how you taking on other people's negative energy and you're 2,000 away?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, it's Facebook, I'm not taking on a lot of body energy. I'm like, every time you decide to log on Facebook, taking on everybody's energy that's on Facebook.
Right.
Every time you decide to comment on a post,
right,
you taking on that person's nonsense.
Right.
You know, you taking on the energy.
Right.
And, you know, and I know she feels lonely to a certain degree. She used to be around her whole family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her family be right there, and you know, getting calls and stuff. But she's not even talking to a family member in Florida, because she doesn't like his wife, who's posting kind of personal stuff about the relationship.
Mm.
And she happens to be white, so of course, you know, that doesn't make it better. Right, that doesn't make it better. And because she has a friend, he keeps taking up with his wife girl, and she doesn't even know it.
She hasn't even met her wife. Social media boy. But she had me telling about wife that she's picking on the girl. But she doesn't even know the situation. And you know, and I'm thinking like, and they've been friends for 35 years.
Wow.
And they blocked each other on Facebook.
Wow.
They not talk to each other. And I'm just thinking like, this chick has actually stopped talking about wife of a white girl, and she doesn't even know.
Wow.
She's never even met her.
Wow. That's social media.
Mm-hmm.
Reality TV.
And I never even met the chick. She friended me, mm-hmm. but she got offended by something that I post. Because mm-hmm. I said that I posted something that basically said, like, for the best results, playing a dark sword.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a picture of a pregnant woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she took offense at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, you know, I don't really care if I take offense to it.
Yeah.
Person I really care, you know, who I've been is my wife and my family, my kids.
Right.
They don't have a problem with it. And I even asked her, like, you know what? I haven't even met you before.
Right.
You know, I know that you married to my wife's cousin, but I don't even know it. So I don't feel the need, you know, to necessarily worry about what your feelings are.
Yeah. And all of those things, that's like diplomatic, you know?
And I, you know, even when she said, I was like, well, what's the problem with Raina Bass Brown? That's her name. I was like, well, what's the problem? You know, and I knew what her problem was.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was like, well, what's the problem? You know, let me know. And then as she told me she was offended, I'm like, sorry, but just don't care.
Right? That's not my concern.
I love it. I appreciate
it. You know, I jump off because she got a black son, you know, half black son or whatever. And she was saying that a lady in the store asked her what nationality he was or whatever. She told him that he was too, you know, the little boy said he was too. Or whatever. And so I asked her, well, what are you telling him that And she said that she's telling him that he's too. But I'm like, well, society is not going to tell him that.
No, he's black.
So I'm like, so you need to be telling him what he is before he gets a real way.
Right.
She was like, well, I do. You know, I'm like, well, what do you tell him? So, I mean, she really never said what she told her. I was like, well, you need to tell her that he's black. Because that's what the world's going to tell her that he is. His dad is black, so he's black.
Yeah.
So she took it. So,
yeah,
I think she got the message.
So that all those, though, speak to the idea of our comfort. That we can, social media and all the other gadget stuff, they allow us to get distracted by things that won't, well, you know, they're optional. They don't really matter. But our grandparents were constantly reminded of what really mattered, and then they had the ability to do it, you know, and they had the training to do it. They had enough shared experience also.
And it was also, to me, like, when I think of my grandparents, their lives were very extreme.
Right.
It was like my grandparents,
they
worked.
Yep.
They church.
Yep.
They raised children.
Mm-hmm.
They co-op with family around food.
Mm-hmm.
And that they worked, church, they raised children,
right.
They co-op with family around food.
Right.
Like, for many years. Before I even came to the picture, you know, just my mother and I grew up like that. It was like you can really focus on an inheritance, financial and spiritual, when you have that kind of, you create that kind of lifestyle.
Very consistent, streamlined, simple, mm-hmm. down to the essential things, mm-hmm. you know, and it's all meaningful.
And it's all meaningful to the point where my grandfather's financial choices
for generations. I think that's the key is like church, family, what did you say? Work?
Yeah. And then co-oping because my family shared food.
And then
I
food.
I never even saw roughly 4,000 results.
Those are pillars. Those are all essential activities. When you anything you do there is of the highest level of importance. That's your security. Food security, money security, family, social security, spiritual security. And that's the foundation of your security, of your confidence, of your sense of identity. Super basic. Super duper basic.
To a certain degree, the technology has actually complicated our lives.
Yes.
And for unnecessary.
And only because we focus on those things. So it's like, I like social media for seeing how off track. Like, people are talking about their job or what happened at their job. They're talking about what happened at church. They're talking about what Junior did at the soccer game. They're talking about what they had for lunch, among other things. They're talking about it. The difference between our generation and the previous generation is that we're not making an opportunity for us to do that together. Let's go to church together. I have a job for you. We're going to have this activity for our children at this place at this time. Those are the parts where it becomes like, we're talking about those activities as we are invested in other people's institutions while we're doing it. The shift between our grandparents' generation and us is that in their time, let's just stay with the car. When they say we're not gonna use public transportation, well, they could point each other to each other that we're gonna go. So and so's gonna drive here. So and so's gonna drive there, and that's everybody moves. Food. We're gonna get all of our food here. You know, now it's like we still could do it though. We got the Mandela Market that comes here.
It's here.
We just have to point ourselves to those kinds of activities, you know, that become a lifestyle, that become the kind of inheritance that will carry over into the next generation. So I'm just trying to drive home this thing of strategizing our consciousness and our behavior in this generation in such a way that all of it will carry over for, you know, three generations. Now, I'm not the market guy. I know, we get the box at home. I go for the shop here, and I do this. You know, that's what I do casually. I'm not in a position to lead that for a group of people. My thing is the spirituality and the culture. So I'll facilitate that. But then moving that into other areas, and then moving other areas into what we do, that's where we create the opportunity to really generate community for ourselves that's going to carry over one generation after the next. But it's our focus and our purposefulness that will make the difference. Otherwise, it's going to go with us.
I feel like we should trust. Mm-hmm. I feel like if we're committed to this, it's spiritual development. But it's like the talent, if you check it into everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe with these guys to just show up with them. Like, when we're done, I need you to go check the video. But you know what I'm saying? It's like we can take care of each other in very fundamental needs. Or support each other in a very fundamental way with that can help us elevate, you know, and then help our children see the work that we're doing is really good, it's really, and then help them. It can be done. Like, just, excuse me, just in the small spiritual, like,
mm-hmm.
The spirituality, I guess, the food ministry. The hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry is a great personal resource to me. Mm-hmm. You know, if your family is struggling for something, you need certain resources. you know, we can really take care of each other.
Create an economy.
We can too. Just like in one small campus, we can do this here. Like start, we can start here.
Right.
Don't have to be half a big and have to make sure it can happen. And it happened with Elijah Muhammad. It was all off before he
got to the top. Right. Right. That's it. And it took the foundation, and then it took Malcolm X, you know, to explode the whole thing. Yeah. So I like that sentiment, and I agree that that's, you know, the temple is a excellent model for autonomy. And I think in this society, that's how it kind of goes. Why? Which is why in every community you always go in there's a church. And then the church has a school, and then that becomes the hub for everything else. That's how our economy is already organized. You know, so it's like instead of resisting that or ignoring it, just you know, play it in your own tune. But I think the temple is an ideal hub for creating an economy. The economy drives the culture. What kind of economy you have is going to determine what kind of culture. Industrial, if it's agrarian, if it's marine, if it's, you know, entertainment or service or whatever, that's going to determine what kind of vibe, what kind of people, what the values are, what... I think he finds it is an excellent template for establishing what kind of a viable African culture everywhere in the world. It's already proven itself to be able to do that. And you look at the blessing of what's happening in the diaspora, Brazil, Haiti, Trinidad, Cuba, Puerto Rico, whatever. You see that it has the ability to break that cycle in three generations. Right, the first Africans to arrive had lost it after three generations. Well, by, you know, 1520, there wouldn't be anything in Cuba. By the year 1650, there wouldn't be anything in Trinidad. By 1812, there wouldn't be any Hutu. You know, so it's proven. No, this culture is sustainable. It can endure. One generation after the next, under the most adverse conditions. But we know it's viable, we know it's sustainable. It's a good, safe bet, sound investment. So with that said, I want to, you know, respect our time and our stomachs and close us in prayer. Would you pray for us?
Forgive us if we trespass against you, forgive us if we move to fear of that. Hold our hands as we grow. Hold our hands as we ask to keep to follow a vision for our family. Develop in us. Develop in us. Appropriate for our family, for our homes, for the
village.
We come to this moment knowing that we're sitting in our voice with the Spirit of the Lord. Our blood is the same.
Okay. Give thanks.